Hello and welcome to this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. Rex, you have returned home, dodging all of the down trees, all the down power lines. You escaped the shelter in place in Monterey County in California. Real quick, how are your past 48 hours? How would you sum it up?
Atmospheric river is what I would go with on that one. You know what? I've been to California the last 2 years, probably, I don't know, 4 or 5 times, just for different tournaments or whatever the case may be. And I think I've stumbled into 3 different atmospheric rivers, which it coming from Florida, we name those. Like, we give those names. Over in California, they just call them, you know, atmospheric rivers. Cold, wet, very windy, very gross. I will say this, that I actually, and I was coming home thinking about, I was flying home thinking about this today, because everyone on social media was taking a victory lap on the idea that, you know, the PGA Tour signature event was ruined and look what happened. This should be embarrassing for them. The tour can't control the weather. Like, of all the things they can control, they can't control that one. And it was a bad week and it wasn't a good look, but you can't blame the tour for that.
You can blame the tour that they've scheduled, I guess, this tournament to be in February. I mean, sure. It could be in a different part of a schedule, could it not? I mean, it's called the Crosby weather for a reason. Like, it's miserable weather this time of year. I remember I covered back in 2017, Jordan, when that's the only time that I've covered the actual PGA Tour event there. And it was glorious that week. I mean, you can get great spells of weather where it's in the 60s, you wear a little hoodie like this, like it's very, very pleasant. But you've also covered a number of these. We've watched a number of them on TV. There are few places in the country where you'd want to be when the weather is as poor as it could possibly be in Pebble Beach.
And I would say this weekend was particularly nasty. Look, the entire week was pretty bad. And I think we dodged a lot of stuff earlier in the week. And then by the time we got to Sunday, I think our luck ran out. I will say the power went out at the hotel on Sunday. The winds whipped us 60 miles an hour. There was a shelter in place order, like all of the things that we've already addressed. I don't know that the tour had another choice. Like, I hate to be the apologist for the PGA Tour on this front, other than you're right. Like, if you really want to do this right and you want to hold the clam bake, this event at the right, perfect time of year, then hold it in June. Like, I think we can have a conversation about how if you switch the entire PGA Tour schedule, that there would be a lot of events that would need to move to different times of the year because they don't play them when they're probably at their best. And this is a perfect example of that.
Yeah. I think if you could break up the West Coast swing, I know the reasons why they do it. I know why they've done it historically, where air travel was a little less convenient than it is now. But we're talking about private jets here. Like, the guys flying from Jupiter to get to Monterey.
Not true. Would it be slightly today? Chris Kirk was sitting in front of me. Sepp Straka was sitting right behind me. Like, not private jets, not happening.
Those are not top 20 players in the world. I'm guessing it's a little bit different.
I think Sepp is.
Sepp Straka is a top 20 player in the world?
I believe he is. You need to look at the world ranking. Let me look at that.
I think Joaquin Niemann's exactly right. Something's up with OWGR. Certainly going to get into that. Rex, how actually was the week at Pebble Beach? A lot of the talk before the tournament was, hey, this is a hugely important week for the PGA Tour, the signature event. Has to go off. I remember Jordan Spieth talking a couple of weeks ago saying, hey, you know, this has really got to work. Now, besides the weather conditions, besides it being shortened to 54 holes for the second time since 2019.
Those are two big besides. Let's be honest.
Granted, how was the actual on-course feel? Did it feel more significant than it has in the past?
Sepp is 21st in the world.
Nailed it. Actually, I thought Chris Kirk was going to be closer to than Sepp Straka.
I didn't even look for Chris Kirk. I just looked for Sepp. I thought actually, Chris Kirk won. Hold on, give me 1 second.
Chris Kirk is 27th. He's 27th in the world.
Thank you for that. No, it didn't feel special. Like, again, I'm the one that's going to sit here and pound my chest and defend the tour, saying that they don't control the weather. But my immediate thought when I pulled up on Monday was it might be a signature event for the players by purse and field and everything else we want to measure it by, but it didn't feel any different than, I don't know, any other AT&T Pebble Beach program I've attended. It didn't feel any different for the fans. It didn't feel any different for those watching at home. And I would argue that, and if you want to counter it, and look, this is a terrible week, and you and I sort of flushed this out earlier in the week on our Golf Today roundtable. You took an event that was already a proven product. And I think the reason that Pebble Beach is a proven product, one, the golf course is a star, and two, the celebrities are the star. And you tried to make it something else. I feel like it's a weird fit. I'm not quite sure if this is where the PGA Tour wants to hang their hat on signature events, because it doesn't feel right. Like you can, the purse was bigger and the weather was bad and everything else we can sit here and talk about, but it didn't feel any different than any other Pebble Beach Pro-Am I've ever watched before, other than the fact that on Saturday you didn't get whatever the celebrity hijinks are. You can fill in the blank for whoever you want to look watch on Saturday. And it also didn't, you know, strike the boxes when it came to, oh, this is the greatest field in golf, because I would argue that the other field going on down in Mexico was also pretty good. So it was a really, really tough sell for the PGA Tour.
So I think that's very interesting, because watching at home, I was like, this is great. I thought it was everything that I hoped it was. And it brings up an interesting dichotomy where the PGA Tour has tried so hard to tailor its product to be the in-person experience, right? Like getting up close to personal to the fans, the hospitality tents, whatever the case may be, making it as accessible as possible. When I think, especially in this new era, with Strategic Sports Group, it needs to be all about the TV product and making it as visually appealing as possible. That means getting the best players in the world together. That means going to the very best venues that the PGA Tour can possibly offer. That can mean kind of ramping up the TV production. We're certainly going to talk about what LIV Golf did over the weekend as well on that front. But watching at home, like, I thought the golf was spectacular. Yes, Pebble did not play how we've seen it play. It did have absolutely zero fire. You had guys losing golf balls just by hitting into the rough.
In the fairway.
It was a little bit sloppy. Like Pebble Beach, I don't think had its full shine on. But Wyndham Clark still shot 60 on Saturday. It was a spectacular round of golf. You still had big names up there. Ludvig Åberg. Folks, it
Åberg.
Is Åberg. Got We're that. Now on the fourth pronunciation.
Did you get the memo? Åberg.
Of the first year PGA Tour player. Like, the leaderboard was good. Scotty was up there. JT was up there. Rory flashed on day one, at least. Like, watching at home, I thought it was fantastic. Okay. Like, I was ready to go for a Sunday showdown, and I was disappointed that it never came to fruition. But I do find that very interesting, the dichotomy watching on TV versus in person, kind of not having that juice that the PGA Tour desperately wants and making big events feel bigger.
Well, and anyone who read my column on Friday would agree with you, because my argument on Friday was, this is what the tour wants and needs. I mean, there's a twofold issue here. You're right. It had the leaderboard. It had the golf course. The weather hadn't caught up with them yet. All of the things that you need to make this into something special, something more than it was before, because that's what we're talking about here, right? Like, essentially, you've asked AT&T to double its investment in this tournament. And that's what they have to do to bring the purse to $20 million. So you have to find a way to justify that. And I'm not sure we ended up there for a lot of different reasons. Probably the biggest one is just Mother Nature and the weather, and it just didn't cooperate. I would argue, and this is, I've been thinking about this all day long. I watched Golf Central on Sunday, and Paul McGinley take umbrage with the idea that that was...
Where were they?
They were actually in a bar at our hotel. It was funny. I woke up. I can tell you exactly where they were, because I woke up and it was like 7:30 in the morning. And I went down to get my coffee like I always do at this little hotel. It's the Hyatt Monterey, if anyone's ever stayed there. And as I walked up, you know, as I slept through in my pajamas to get my coffee, I saw Paul McGinley and Todd Lewis, talking. And like, I order my coffee and I don't pay much attention. And I see them go into a side room and I look, it's a bar. So of course I have to poke my head in there. And I'm like, what's happening in here? Like at 7:30 in the morning, they were in a bar in the Hyatt Monterey, to answer your question. But I was taken by the idea, and you brought this up, and I don't want to derail the podcast right now, but I am curious what your thought is, because Paul McGinley was dead set on the idea that that was not a course record because they were playing lift clean and plays. And Johnson Wagner had a slightly different take. Rich Lerner had a slightly different take. My take was, I get where he's coming from. I wrote it for NBCSports.com/golf that it was a course record. I get where he's coming from. It's still really, really hard. He still beat the field average by more than 9 shots. Like, I don't know why you would sort of disparage that.
I mean, that's certainly not the first time I've ever played Lift Preferred Lies at Pebble Beach. It's not the first time that conditions have been favorable, or, you know, the greens were receptive, or the fairways were playing a little bit wider because of how soft that they were. He still crushed the field average. He was still the lowest score
by
of the day.
By more than 9 strokes.
By 3. I mean, you think of how long golf has been played at Pebble Beach. It was a phenomenal round. And it actually could have. This sounds ridiculous. The 60 easily could have been 2 or 3 shots lower.
It could have been a 57. And at some point, it was an interesting, because I went out and started walking. I caught up with him on the 15th hole. And there is a sort of dichotomy there that he could have had a 57, but in the back of his mind, I think he realized that we could have ended up where we ended up, because he knew the forecast for Sunday. He knew the forecast for Monday. And at some point, you could tell he almost started protecting, because he looked at the leaderboard, saw he had a 2 or 3 stroke lead, and decided that I'm not going to be aggressive just to try to get to some sort of magical number.
I mean, it does sound ridiculous saying it could have been lower. Obviously, he made a bunch of bombs, right? Like, he was making 20, 30 footers. I think about the putty bait on the fringe for a bogey.
On 16, it hung on the lip. On 17, it hung on the lip.
There was a bunch of 12, 15 footers that certainly could have dropped. It was a course record, one of the best rounds that we've seen in recent memory on the PGA Tour. Whether you want to give it an asterisk or not, I don't particularly care, but it will go down in the record books as a course record for Wyndham Clark. Rex, I did want to touch on something that happened off the golf course. We saw the press conference from Roy McIlroy. We saw the press conference from Jordan Spieth. And then, per our buddy Alex Maselli, GWA treasurer Alex Maselli, with Sports Illustrated, he wrote that Roy McIlroy removed himself from a top player group chat, and Jordan Spieth called him, and they spoke for an hour to clear the air regarding whether or not they want the Saudi Public Investment Fund to partner with the PGA Tour. Roy says yes, has to be. Jordan Spieth said he doesn't necessarily think that the PGA Tour now needs the Saudis. What's going on here? Because it seems like a major fracturing of opinion at the top tour player level.
I feel like you're dumbing that down a little bit, because I think what we end up here in whatever the conversation was between Jordan and Rory, I'm not going to pretend to be in on that 45 or hour long phone call. I think the bigger issue here is, if you're Jordan Spieth or you're someone on the policy board or certainly someone on the PGA Tour side of these negotiations, you probably don't want one of your most outspoken and high profile players saying that, of course, we need the Saudis involved, and of course, we'll come up with some sort of deal with the Saudis. You're in the middle of a negotiation. That's not the way you want to negotiate. So I think the conversation had more to do with, yes, we're probably going to end up where you think we're going to end up anyway, and that's with some sort of combination of private equity and PIF money and the PGA Tour enterprises, and we come up with a global tour and all of the things that Roy has predicted. I wrote this last week. Like, he has become the prognosticator. He's become the one that sort of says something, and 6 months from now, it becomes true. We probably end up there anyway. I truly believe we need to end up there. But from a negotiating standpoint, you don't need to say it.
No, but you could sound more optimistic. Webb Simpson was interviewed at length with Todd Lewis. I know it wasn't a press conference setting. And then obviously Jordan was. The way that it came across.
Well, actually, Jordan walked his comments back, by the way. I mean, you weren't part of this conversation at Pebble Beach, but I was there with Alex Maselli the next day, or I guess it would have been on Friday, and he walked those comments back. Like, I don't think anybody wants to sit here and say that.
Because Roy probably called him out on it. Like, if you listen to his press conference on Wednesday, it was like, no, I think we're kind of good here, and who knows, they'll probably strike it down anyway. Like, it was very dismissive of the idea, which I think is what took Rory aback.
Probably. And again, this is all a negotiating situation, right? Like at this point in time, there's people in the room, really, really smart people in the room for the PGA Tour and for the Public Investment Fund. And they probably don't want any of this discussed in public because that's not doing them any favors whatsoever. All they're trying to do is to hammer out a deal that's best for both sides. And that's what you keep hearing, right? That's the key phrase. That's, you know, the signature points. I don't know. Whatever it is Jordan was trying to get to, I don't know that he believed in it. Because I keep going back to the idea that we don't end up at anywhere close to where probably SSG wants golf to end up without PIF involved. Because if PIF's not involved, we can talk about an alternate universe. But we all know what that's going to look like. They're just going to keep poaching players. They're just going to keep taking the top players whenever they want them. They're going to keep taking the top amateur players as they come out of college. And that's not a sustainable model either. So you're not going to invest $1.5 billion into whatever PGA Tour Enterprises is going to be with the idea that they have some sort of competitor, quote unquote, irrational threat.
I'm totally with you. That's why it was so surprising to hear Spieth's comments, at least on Wednesday, in a press conference setting. And I'm with you. Like,
I've been feeling themselves a little bit, honestly. Like, look, I think the tour felt like they had a W when they hadn't had a W in a long time. And that Webb Simpson and, as you pointed out, Jordan Spieth and Peter Malnati, they all probably wanted to take some sort of victory lap after being, you know, sort of on the ropes for quite a while. I can see that. However, in the big picture, I still keep coming back to the idea it doesn't work without everyone under the same tent.
I mean, I don't know how at least some sort of PIF investment isn't worth pursuing. You've already padded these guys' wallet now. You're going to have this repayment program and it's going to be divvied up however it's going to be divvied up. But the only way to get the game back together is to pursue a PIF investment. The only way to infuse the PGA Tour with billions, we're not talking millions, we're talking billions more. SSG is going to put $1.5 billion more, but PIF could potentially be three or more billion more. This is a chance, Rex, to do something that is really appealing with this World Tour concept for the fans who have been left out in this whole deal. We already know the PGA Tour, and everyone's sick about hearing how much PGA Tour players are going to be made. But if everyone can be unified once again in the next year or two, there is the potential here to create something very cool for the fans. But that only can happen with a PIF investment. It's the only thing that can. It's the only thing that can happen.
Well, and Adam Scott also kind of had a very, very similar take. So it seems to me they were all sort of reading off the same cue cards on this front. I'll agree with what you said, and I'll point out that you started, before you turned the record button on for this podcast, asking if I watched the live event. Well, of course I watched the live event because, well, one, no, I didn't have anything else to do on Sunday afternoon because I was reined in and sheltering in place like everyone else in Monterey County. You could sit here, like, I'm tired of dancing around the idea that you want to call whatever we had at Pebble Beach the best field in golf. Well, it clearly was not. Like, you can say whatever it is you want to say, but John Rahm and
PGA Championship is the best field in golf.
John Rahm and Cam Smith and Dustin Johnson and Brooks Koepka, and I keep going down the list. I actually had this long conversation with a player on LIV earlier this week. He made the argument that we have a better field here than they have at Pebble. And I sort of play devil's advocate on that front, and I'm not sure the world ranking math would agree with that, but you can look at the field and you can look at the product, and this was a prime example, and trust me, not good for the tour at all. Again, they took it on the chin because of Mother Nature, but had they had perfect weather at Pebble Beach, and they did have perfect weather down in Mexico, if those two went head-to-head, then you decided which product was better. And I think that's the indication. I think that's probably the best justification I can come up with, that you have to have some sort of combination of all of those things, PIF money, private equity money, and PGA Tour Enterprises, because the way it is right now is not sustainable.
Yeah. I mean, there's little doubt that the PGA Tour as it stands right now is bereft of characters. That Liv took Phil and Bubba and Brooks and Bryson and P. Reed and Sergio. I mean, these are guys
who Harold Varner. You can keep going down them. The list. Like, they went or after the ones that were personalities. Yep.
Cam Smith. He's not the most vivacious character, but like people actually like watching him play golf. And he played, I would call it, exciting brand of golf, right? Those guys are all on LIV. I think the PGA Tour has better players overall, but there is no doubt that LIV is where the characters are. That's where I kind of wanted this conversation to go, because this was, I think, a week for LIV to really celebrate. In my opinion, LIV had a moment this past week. If you're Jay Monahan, I'm not sure this run out that unfolded over the past 4 or 5 days could have gone any worse, because there's no football on Sunday to distract eyeballs. Your second signature event, first full field signature event of a season was rained out, so you couldn't distract eyeballs that way. LIV had the sports calendar to themselves, and in my opinion, they delivered a really good show on Sunday. If you look at the week in total, they finalized its 2024 roster with two more top 40 guys. You had John Rahm in the mix all the way through the 54th hole. You had Joaquin Niemann shoot a 59 on Friday, which by any metric, Data Golf has the stats, was the third best round of golf against the field over the past decade plus. And then you had a Niemann and Sergio Garcia playoff under lights. This was the first time, Rex, that it actually seemed like sports fans, golf fans in particular, were paying attention, kind of because they had nothing else to do on Sunday. And this was just about the best possible circumstance for them.
For LIV, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I would be curious, look, they've gotten really guarded when it comes to viewership and exactly how many people are tuning into the CW and LIV Golf Plus and whatever that is. I would love to see whatever those numbers are, because you're right. I think this is, if we start doing an apples to apples comparison, this is probably your best opportunity to compare whatever happened is on Sunday at the LIV event to whatever happened on Saturday. And look, it's not a fair comparison. I understood this, and people of LIV have pointed this out. Like, LIV on CW can't go head to head with the PGA Tour and CBS. Like, that's just not going to happen. But considering it was the third round and everything else that was going on, I'd love to see the comparison, because I think you're right. And this was probably the first time in 2 years that we've had a legitimate argument where you could sit down and say the product on that side is every bit as good as the product on this side. And you may not agree with that, and there's going to be plenty of people who don't. I understand that. But given what LIV has done over the last, I would say, 6 weeks, really, to improve their product, and given the fact that the PGA Tour tried to improve their product and got really, really unlucky, I think it'd be an interesting comparison.
So I watched all of the first LIV event. Remember the London one in 2022? I've watched bits and pieces over the past 2 years, certainly.
All of it, start to finish? You watched all of the first London?
I watched all of the first one start to finish. It's unrecognizable from that event in June 2022. And I've popped in here or there basically just so I can be somewhat knowledgeable about it. But this was the first time, Rex, that from start to finish, I watched a LIV golf tournament. From start to finish, from the 2 minute window that it came on CW
before
the shotgun start was going to be. What did I cook yesterday? I used my Vaxxilar for the first time. So I had some two-bone pork chops that I smoked and then seared. They're delicious. They're delicious. Sure. Did on the pellet grill because the weather was a little bit crappy in Northeast Florida. And so this is probably the easiest way to do it. So I actually wrote down on my phone like a pros and cons list. And I don't want to be one of those people who like you have to pick a side. Either you like the PGA Tour or you like LIV. Like I do think there's room for a golf fan to enjoy both of them. That's kind of the takeaway that I had. If I only had one TV and it's Sunday afternoon and Pebble was on and LIV Mayakoba was on, which one would I turn to? I would watch the PGA Tour, right? You'd watch the PGA Tour. But I do think that there is room for a golf fan to enjoy both. So the pros, and this is what I wrote down. The production quality on a LIV broadcast, Rex, is phenomenal. The graphics, the visuals, the enhancements, the drone shots, it all seems, at least to a golf viewer, someone who's been watching golf for as long as I can remember, it seems revolutionary for golf TV, which is often stayed. I mean, you have mic'd up caddies. You had Joaquin Niemann and his caddy going over the reed on the winning pivotal putt on the 54th hole of the golf tournament. You would never have that right now on a PGA Tour telecast. The tweak that they've made for 2024 that I also thought was a good thing is that all four scores now are counting for your team.
During the final round,
it's just in the final round that now all four scores count. I do think it's a little bit distracting bouncing back and forth. And that was actually one of my cons, Rex, is that as someone who has followed college golf, has covered college golf, has watched college golf on television, college golf on television doesn't quite work unless it's the NCAA championship for me, because I feel like you're dividing the attention. Are you an individual competition in crowning an individual champion, or are you focused on the team competition and which team is going to prevail? If you try and do both, you tend not to do either particularly well. That's where I feel like that's a big con for me, that Liv is stuck. Do you still want to appeal to the OWGR and make sure Neiman's winning the golf tournament and he can go woof about not being in the major championships, which of course is not true. He's very likely to be in two of the four this year. Or are you leaning in to Torque and Legion 13 and the Crushers? That's, I think, the big thing that Liv needs to decide. What do you want to be? Because being both doesn't really work.
No, I can see that. I'd be curious what else was on the con side of that list.
I'm not sure how much you listened. As someone
who has your phone up, so I don't know how you're. Are you just doing this off the top of your head?
So one big con for sure, and I'm sure anyone who's listening to this who watched the CW broadcast, the music is incredibly distracting. Like it's distracting from the first tee, and it's distracting all the way until the 18th hole. I understand I've heard from people who have been on site. I have not been at a Live Golf tournament yet. That it kind of fades into the background noise. But on the telecast, it's incredibly disarming. Excuse me. It's incredibly distracting.
That's $5.
It's distracting to hear like pumping, like boom, tick, boom, tick, boom, tick, boom, tick, boom, tick, when you're on the 53rd hole of a tournament and you're trying to thread a 7-iron into a very small target. Like it just doesn't work. They have to find a way to somehow eliminate that and make it feel like a real golf tournament.
All right. So that's it.
That was one. And like you still look at the roster of players and you look at the players who are competing and whose score unfortunately did count in the final round. There's still probably a dozen too many also rans and has-beens. And like over time, if these two sides continue to feud, if there is no union, if the game of golf continues to support two different tours, like those guys are very likely to cycle out. With competitive PGA Tour players. But right now there's still 10, 12, 14 players who shouldn't be on our television screens if this is a very serious product.
Very late last night, Wyndham Clark did a video press conference, because of just the way things sort of happened. And during that press conference, he was asked point blank, I was a little surprised by this, if he had been approached by Liv Golf and his thoughts. And he probably gave one of the best answers I think I've heard when it comes to a player who either went to a Liv Golf or didn't go, like whatever side you want to be on. But he was very effusive in the idea that, yes, I've been approached. And he went on. I don't want to paraphrase it because I'm not going to do it justice. I would suggest you go to NBCSports.com/golf to see everything he said about it. But I was fascinated by the idea that ultimately he came to the decision to stay at the PGA Tour. And there are plenty of people out there, and I've discovered that this is a toxic landscape, that when Wyndham Clark says something like this, the immediate response is, oh, he didn't get the offer he wanted. Maybe. Like, I don't know how these
things
work.
He got an offer, and it was pretty appealing, that the fact that he needed to be talked out of it by some of his friends.
Sure, and some of his friends were Jordan Spieth and Tiger Woods and Ricky Fowler. That was, to me, the part that sort of stood out, because of everything that sort of has transpired in golf, and I have nothing against Wyndham Clark. This is not going to, I don't want him to catch a stray here at all. I'm curious why those three players specifically, Jordan Spieth, Ricky Fowler, Tiger Woods, decided to convince Wyndham Clark not to join Liv Golf. Because at that point, he was a two-time tour winner. Granted, one of those tour wins is
reigning US Open champion.
Reigning US Open champion, which I'm with you. But why did they feel like they needed to lean in that much versus, I don't know, John Rahm, for example? My guess is John Rahm didn't get a call from Tiger Woods as he was trying to make his decision to join LIV Golf. So I guess my point in all of this is I'm not quite sure. And it goes back to our previous conversation. I'm not quite sure how we move forward if this continues to be the cloud that hangs over professional golf.
I just think it was such an interesting dynamic, Rex, because you're in the same position that all these PGA Tour players were in. They had nothing to do on Sunday. You can only go to the gym for so long. You can only read so many books. You can only FaceTime with your family for so long.
Victor Hovland, by the way.
What's that?
Good boy. I went to the gym with Victor Hovland. That's what I did.
Probably not with him. And you were probably doing decidedly different exercises.
Yeah, we're both killing it, crushing it, both of us.
But the point remains that I bet you a bunch of PGA Tour players tuned in to watch for themselves the LIV Golf product. And I saw something that was probably very, very appealing. I did find it humor. So John Rahm, if you guys missed it, went bogey to fall out of the individual lead. And I felt for the on-course reporter. I don't remember her name. But she walked straight into a hornet's nest. She interviewed John Rahm about 2 minutes after he finished up. And you knew what the question was going to be.
I don't know.
Because John, you blew the individual title, but your Legion 13 team still won. I think it's what, $5 million for the team that they, or $4 million they divvy up among the team members. And he was like, that's a tough question to get right after walking off the golf course, and I probably need 5 minutes to decompress. And then, of course, he answers it eloquently, like John Rahm always does. But I do still think, Rex, that there is immense potential for the team aspect if A, it is strictly about teams, and you're playing with match play, or you're playing even metal match play if you still want to get all 18 holes involved, and B, if you have the right players. If you were combining the best players in the PGA Tour and they had their own team and the players on LIV, and maybe you swap out a couple extra ones, and you do this 4 to 6 times a year. I don't think 13 regular season events and then the 14 team championship. I just think that's too much to do. But if you sprinkle this in throughout the regular PGA Tour schedule 4 to 6 times, I think it's a home run, especially if you lean strictly into the team aspect. I really do. That was one of the takeaways I had from watching for 4 to 5 straight hours.
I had a tour player call me last week who was close with John and friends. And he told me that John's going to be miserable there for the reasons you just pointed out, because he doesn't have that gear. Like, he's not going to be able to separate the fact that I just went bogey bogey to lose the event, but oh, my team won. Like, he doesn't have that gear. He doesn't have the gear that I want to wear shorts. I want to hear loud music on every tee box. Like, that's not the way John Rahm is sort of wired.
I would actually disagree. Seeing it yesterday, I think it does work for him, because you're not going head to head against any other team. It's just kind of, you add it up at the end and, oh, let's see who wins.
I think the general vibe is what this player was trying to tell me. Of LIV Golf. Like, he just doesn't. And look, we've talked about this before. I guess Dustin Johnson is being the primary example, fair or not fair. But did he lose his edge going to LIV Golf? I don't know if he did or not.
I'm not sure he ever had an edge. He was just really good at golf.
He was just really, really good at golf. And I disagree with that as well, because when he got to a certain stage, he seems to stall. He seemed to stall. And yet he decided to go find another gear, fix his wedge game, become a major champion, become a world number one, whatever the case may be. John Rahm being the primary example here, like, look, man, that's just not, like, he's driven to be intense. And as you pointed out, I would feel so bad for anyone that has to interview him in that situation, because there is no question that you could possibly ask him that would elicit a friendly response. Like, you're always going to get a little bit of venom right off the top, and then
hornet's nest.
Yes. And he, as you pointed out, he's very eloquent in when he wants to be, and he can sit down and he can talk to you and about nuanced things. In that particular case, I would never want to have to do that.
But I mean, John Rahm in that final round, Rex, to kind of debunk this tour player's theory, He was pumping his fist. He seemed plenty motivated. Afterward, he was still steaming individually. Your individual
one of 14, man. One of 14.
Your individual performance.
Let's catch up when they get to Doral.
The team thing. And so if John Rahm wins 10 times, I think he's going to be plenty engaged on the live circuit. Do I think he was perusing the leaderboard, seeing how Caleb Surratt's playing or Kieran Vincent is playing? No, I have a hard time believing that he was letting his mind wander to that throughout the course of the round. A good performance still powers the team, which is what I think actually one of the faults for live golf. And I think it's worth stepping back and looking at this 30,000 feet. We're still talking about regular season golf. Pebble Beach, regular season golf. Live Mayakoba, regular season golf. These are all just kind of precursors to the major championships. Last year was proof with Phil and Brooks at the Masters, and then obviously Brooks at the PGA. Like, you can still warm up for the major championships by playing live golf. These guys don't lose their edge. They're not unmotivated. They're still grinding. It's just different competition. That's one of the things that's been debunked. But I think overall, a hugely successful week for live. Another litmus test, though, to see how it's actually kind of resonating with the sports audience. They're playing again this week in Las Vegas, which is also hosting the Super Bowl a day later. Liv's going to finish on Saturday. Despite my best efforts on this podcast a year ago, the Phoenix Open is still going to end on Sunday. Why they do not move this tournament to Wednesday through Saturday, I'll never know. We'll have that
how
debate.
How was TPC Sawgrass?
On Wednesday. TPC Sawgrass, thank you for asking. You can see my hair is disheveled. You can see I'm a little bit windburned. It was horrible. Shout out to my friends at the PGA Tour, especially Stuart Moore, who invited me as part of the quote-unquote local media. Shout out Knock Life. I always get the Players Championship Media Day invite. It was brutal. It was 50, spitting rain at times, blowing 30. I had a great group of guys that I play with, guys who absolutely mash the ball. My self-esteem has never been lower. I've never felt more emasculated. But going through Rex, going through a grip change in 50 degree, 30 mile an hour winds on quite possibly the most penal golf course in the country.
Tough scene.
Would not recommend it.
Yeah.
Not recommend it. Okay. What are you going to have on the docket for the next 48 hours? We will still do the preview podcast. I know this is a late record on Monday evening. We will do the Phoenix Open preview podcast. What do you have cooking? I heard things aren't going necessarily well with Bunkmate.
No, I came home to a hornet's nest, as you just said. So I got to do some, let's call it PR work. And I have a fitting tomorrow for new wedges. Thank you, Bob Vokey and Titleist. Outside of that, I'm just looking forward to being home, man.
Tina with Titleist, I love you. I also had the wedge fitting on Monday as well. Can't wait to game those. I can't possibly play Rex any worse than I'm currently doing. Speaking of golf, not to get too personal, my wife, I bought her lessons for Christmas.
That's a good move. Savvy move.
Bought her lessons. She has her first round of golf. We're going to play 9 holes on Thursday afternoon. I'm sure we'll be updating the podcast listeners on Sunday with how that goes. And then I also have a Super Bowl scramble on Sunday. My 8 or 9 handicap is just looking really poor at the moment.
I didn't know this. Where is the scramble?
It's at Marsh Landing. It's just a little MGA event that we have on Super Bowl morning. It's actually going to be cutting into, we're having a Super Bowl party before I leave for Riv early Monday morning. It's actually cutting into my barbecue schedule.
Oh no!
So gonna have to figure out. I'm gonna have to cook some stuff ahead of time. Gonna have to keep the offset fired up through the first or second quarter of a Super Bowl. But I'm sure we will make do. More on that on Wednesday. All right, that's gonna do it for this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. As always, we appreciate you guys listening, commenting, and all of the support. We'll be back in, I don't know, 48 hours for a preview of the Waste Management Phoenix Open. That's all for now. If you guys need anything else, make sure you go to nbcsports.com/golf for the latest news and notes in the world of golf. Talk to you guys in a couple of days.